Welcome to The Workplace, a podcast by Cal Chamber. I'm Erica Frank, Cal Chamber's General Counsel and Executive Vice President. And with me today, we have Tiffany Boyland, who is a very experienced workers' compensation attorney who works for the Sacramento office of Michael Sullivan and Associates. Tiffany is also chair of the Community Outreach Subcommittee and vice chair of the Executive Committee for the Worker Compensation Section of the California Lawyers Association. And we're so excited to have you. Hi, Tiffany. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me and getting through that mouthful of information I provided you.
I think it's fantastic. And what we're going to talk about today is workers' compensation, which normally isn't the most exciting thing to talk about, but it's reached heightened levels because last week on May 6th, Governor Newsom issued an executive order that's specific to COVID-19 and workers' compensation benefits. So we wanted to have you on the podcast today to kind of talk about it. I think maybe a lot of employers haven't necessarily heard about the executive order and how it impacts workers. So we're hoping you can shed a little bit of light on the issue for us.
Sure, happy to.
What is workers' compensation and why are employers required to provide workers' compensation insurance?
Sure, it's an interesting area of law for me in that it's continually evolving, but at its heart, it's just administrative law, so you wouldn't normally end up in criminal or civil court if you had a workers' compensation claim. But it's a no-fault system that's essentially designed to avoid the extreme costs and delays that are associated with the tort system. I'm sure you've all heard of, you know, very high settlements in the tort arena. And if we continued down that road all those years ago, we would all be bankrupt, I would say. So it's designed to be no-fault. It's kind of like car insurance, if you think about it, depending on what your deductible is, I guess. But it's kind of similar in concept to that.
So like car insurance, then I guess we could talk about it for those on the call that may be going, what are they talking about? Torts. I've never heard of that word. It's really for people who are injured at work, like your auto insurance.
Absolutely.
Cover, you know, if you're injured driving your vehicle and covers the injury to your vehicle. The workers' compensation system is for workplace injuries, right?
Exactly. I mean, if you were to, it even goes so far as if you were to, for example, have a stroke at work and you fell down and broke your arm, the stroke might not be, depending on the circumstances, work-related, but the broken arm would be covered. So really all that has to happen is that the injury occurs at work. And that's a very broad strokes program. I mean, Erica, as you know, our committee has an entire 1 to 2 hour presentation on workers' compensation 101. So there's a lot to be covered even in the basics of workers' compensation, but that's essentially it at its heart and why an employer is required to carry that insurance, because the alternative would be the employer or employee suing one another in the civil arena. That's an extremely costly and time-heavy area, and it would really end up bankrupting our system. So this is an effort to moderate that and keep everything more or less copacetic and everyone employed and everyone gainfully in their business ventures as well.
So, Tiffany, I have a huge smile on my face, even though you can't see it because we're virtual here. When you threw out the example of the individual having a stroke and falling and hurting their arm and, you know, really distinguishing that the stroke wouldn't be work-related, but the injury to the arm could, it's a perfect segue to the governor's workers' compensation executive order, which created a rebuttable presumption on any worker who tests positive or is diagnosed with COVID-19 within 14 days after performing labor or services at the employer's place of work or in the scope of employment. And I know that's a ton of information right now, but let's talk about this because, I mean, let's break it down. So, Tiffany, what's a rebuttable presumption?
Oh, those are so much fun. So all it really means is that the presumption is not conclusive, and one party or another can take efforts to overcome that presumption. And in this particular case, that burden would be on the employer, which is also the defendant. And actually, that reminds me real quick, Erica, I did want to lay some groundwork just for some terms that people might hear and not be familiar with in the course of this podcast. Almost always when there's a workers' compensation claim that's litigated, the defendant will be the employer slash third party administrator slash insurance company, whereas the injured worker is quite often referred to as an applicant because they filed an application. So again, when I say the defendant would be the one that had the burden to rebut this presumption, I'm referring to the employer essentially.
Okay, that's really helpful. And in normal circumstances, when there's a workers' compensation claim that's filed for a workplace injury, the injured party has to prove that the injury was caused by or arose out of something in the workplace, correct?
Yeah, injury AOE-COE, yes, exactly.
But here with this rebuttable presumption, that actually flips it around so that if somebody says, I got COVID-19 at work, or that I got COVID-19, it's presumed that they got it at work, and now the employer has to present evidence that says, no, this person didn't come down with COVID-19 at work, rather someplace else. Am I summarizing that correctly?
Yeah, I think you're right. And if you take another step back, again, kind of with the history of workers' compensation, traditionally in a normal non-COVID, let's say, claim, the employer slash carrier, the defendant, would have 90 days to investigate the claim and put it on delay while they determine whether or not they're accepting or denying the claim. After that 90 days has elapsed, if they have not made a decision timely to deny the claim, it's presumed accepted. So it's actually very similar in concept. It's just a very tightened time frame that makes it a lot more difficult for the employer to get that information within that time frame. Does that make sense?
It does. So really, the employer has to act really quickly and get all of their ducks in a row to be able to, what we call, rebut the presumption or overcome the presumption to say, hold on here, the worker, while they've come down with COVID-19, they didn't contract it here at work,
right,
or during the course and scope of their employment. Now, I am by far nowhere near a doctor. I went to law school, but who can't read about COVID-19, and it's almost impossible to get away from it. But you know, at least my limited knowledge is, it's a communicable disease. It can happen at work, at the grocery store, just out and about. So what can employers do to lessen the chances that they're going to be faced with a workers' compensation claim for COVID-19?
Well, in that arena, I would suggest that if you're going to be taking people back to work, as actually my office is reopening this week, and this entire time, our San Diego office has been open for the mail team because we're completely paperless, and they work so hard to keep up, essentially, with the huge volume of mail we get. And because the office was otherwise empty, they practice social distancing and other, sanitizing and things like that. So, I mean, from my perspective, a short answer or just even a layman's answer to that would be, again, as you pointed out, neither one of us is a doctor, would be providing those types of items, gloves, PPE, masks, encouraging frequent hand washing, sanitizing stations, maybe even a hand washing station, that type of thing. And there's a lot that goes into that consideration because, as you said, it is very difficult to, in that 30-day time frame, figure out whether or not this actually is related to work. And the main example I keep hearing is just, you know, if you've got 20 coworkers all working in the same environment, all with the same, being provided the same materials, let's say, and one of them gets the virus. Well, it certainly would seem that it did not arise from that work environment. But then how do you go about rebutting that? Because in an ideal, normal environment, it's difficult to set a deposition within 30 days, as it is, much less obtain records and a medical report and something that says, yes, this definitely happened at work. And it's interesting, too, that you pointed out that it's easily communicable to everybody. And that's why we don't cover things like the cold and the flu. Even if you were somehow to be able to show that happened at work, that's just not something that's typically covered by workers' compensation. And you can stop me at any point here, but I did want to talk about the order a little bit and what it states is allowed for rebutting the presumption.
Yeah. Yes, please do.
So the order states, quote, other evidence, end quote. So what does that mean? That's so broad. It's very inconclusive as to what that could mean. Now, we did see Governor Newsom state in a television press conference that rebutting the presumption could only be done with what he said was, quote, strict criteria. Now, that is not described in the order, and it's not enumerated in the order as to what that would mean. So him stating that in the televised press conference is not going to be binding on anybody, but it is curious as to what they intended to mean, or are they going to elaborate on what that means? But again, I mean, the thought is you would need some medical evidence for the most part, or some correlation between the work activities and their contracting it. And another thing that was interesting, too, is just that it's not going to apply only to essential workers. It applies to anybody, as you pointed out earlier, Erica, that's out in the workforce at the direction of their employer. So that's an even broader sweep, too.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. So this is an executive order, which is a little bit different from other laws, but I think our listeners have become familiar with executive orders because we've been talking about a lot of them as the governor has been issuing them throughout the COVID-19 pandemic. And I think this, this is no different to the extent that it is changing what the existing landscape had been. How long is this executive order in place for?
Well, it's retroactive to 3/19/20 and extends to 7/5/2020. So in theory, and this is a math problem I don't want to try and get into too much, but in theory, you could have people that are already past the 30 days, right? So and the employer doesn't even know about the claim yet.
Oh, right.
So how they right. And so they have not necessarily had any chance to conduct any discovery or – I mean, it's like how does that work? Because normally – the 90-day time frame in a normal claim begins once the claim form is filed. It's not date of knowledge. So even if I see you fall down and hurt your hip or something, the 90 days does not start running until I get handed a claim form. So if that happens in this retroactive period through 7/5/2020, I mean, if it happened on March 20th and they did give them a claim form, it could have already fallen in that window. So again, that's a word problem I don't want to get into too much, but there are some tricky scenarios that could be at play with that 30-day time frame. And again, it's just so hard. It's challenging enough to conduct discovery in 90 days because, it can be done. You can take a depo, you can get a med legal, you can subpoena records in that time frame. But think about it. Sometimes it can take a month to get a deposition set, and that's typically where I get my record locations at that deposition because I'm going to ask the applicant where they've treated throughout their lifetime in terms of it being relevant to the instant injury. And then I have to order those records, and then I need to provide all that information to the medical legal doctor, and I have to do that in a certain time frame where an applicant's attorney, opposing counsel, gets to review all those materials that I'm sending. So it's challenging to get that done in 90 days. I can't really fathom it in a 30-day time frame either.
And when we're talking about a depo and all of this, what we're talking about is a deposition, which is basically it kind of in the basic sense, a meeting where the attorneys get together with their clients and one's trying to get information from the other in a structured setting, so to speak. So under normal circumstances, it takes a long time to get all the evidence required. And here we're shortening it tremendously to 30 days, which makes it even more challenging for that employer to be able to get the evidence needed to demonstrate that this was a non-workplace related illness.
Absolutely. I mean, there are some environments where I think it's going to be a foregone conclusion. You know, your medical workers, your frontline people, the first responders, all that type of thing. And Skiff, who is a huge insurer in this state, has actually made the decision to just pick up any claim that they're presented with, which is really interesting and forward movement, depending on, I guess, your thinking. But, I mentioned to you that I also spoke with some judges and applicants attorney on our committee. And just as a caveat, I'm not trying to endorse anything on behalf of the Workers' Compensation Appeals Board or the Department of Industrial Relations, just because I know a judge would make me want to give that disclaimer. But they had some interesting points that, in their perspective, it would be very difficult to overcome this presumption because of the shortened time frames, and especially if there is exposure. If you have 5 people in your work environment out of 15 that come down with it, you know, those types of things are going to lend itself to a doctor and ultimately potentially a judge saying, yeah, this looks to be work-related.
Okay, so this is all extremely interesting and fantastic information that I really appreciate you providing to our podcast listeners today. And, you know, I think we can't emphasize enough, and this goes along with everything that the state has been talking about, the CDC has been talking about, the governor has been talking about with his resilience roadmap and industry-specific guidelines about getting those safety measures in place to make sure that you keep your employees, your customers, your vendors healthy with, if you need PPEs by chance, hand sanitation, emphasizing social distancing. That really becomes extraordinarily even more important than it has been. So good information. And Tiffany, thank you so much for joining us today on the podcast.
Oh, again, thank you so much for having me.
And thank you all for listening to The Workplace. Please comment, share, and subscribe to Cal Chambers Podcast by visiting calchamber.com.